Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with my new friend, Andrew Mitchum, the owner, operator, and brewmaster for Sennett Avenue Brewing in Jersey Village, which, as Andrew would call it, is the first OG suburb of Houston. About a month ago, I was riding my one wheel around the area and stumbled across Sennett Ave just a couple miles from my home. As a resident of unincorporated Houston, its existence was a deeply welcomed revelation. Not only is it a great brewery, it's also a restaurant with an excellent vibe and enough space for my kids to run around outside. It was a joy to get to sit down with Andrew to chat about his business and his unique journey to figure out what he wants to do when he grows up. So listen in as Andrew and I discuss starting a nano brewery during a pandemic, why it's easier than ever to be an entrepreneur, and how he legitimately became mayor of Jersey Village. Yeah, it's been fun, and it's opened some doors for me, but basically these were conversations that we're already having. I got into real estate four-ish years ago, partially because I was tired of corporate work, and I was working, if I was working really hard and busting it, like, number one on my team, didn't matter. If I spent 5 hours a day on Reddit and still made my numbers, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And it was actually the boredom that killed me more than anything.
Oh my gosh, like, you're speaking my language, sir. I worked in IT. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you're probably one of these people too, but I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah.
I'm 38. This is job number 25, I think. Career shift number 5. And I worked in IT in oil and gas. And I can say this because he's no longer my boss. I had a great boss, had a great everything, but I got promoted to the point where I was working for just three people, the three or four people at the top of the company, and they were never there.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of times where I literally sat for a whole week doing nothing.
Yeah.
And my brain is not designed to sit and do nothing. So
agreed.
It was very boring. And so, I mean, I just basically sat and just did business plans of what do I want to do? But it was like, it was not making me happy.
Yeah.
I was very good at what I did, and people, you know, that's why I got up to where I was, but they put me in front of these very important billionaire people, but I can't sit. And so I would like walk around the tunnels downtown, downtown, just walk around,
see what's down there,
like do laps and just, oh man, just try to stimulate something.
Yeah.
So
they won't do it.
It's like, everyone's like, well, why'd you leave that? That's a pretty cushy job. And it was,
that's the problem.
Taking that leap is scary. But you know, the kids these days say YOLO, you only live once. And it's a damn good thing to live by. You know, don't go jumping off bridges and stuff, but,
sure.
but you do only live once.
Yeah.
And you know, I love a challenge, love everything about it. So,
Well, we'll dive into all that. Andrew Mitchum with Sennett Avenue Brewing, Sennett Ave.
Yeah, we do Sennett Ave or Sennett Avenue. It depends. But if I'm writing it, it's Sennett Ave.
Sennett Ave Brewing. We are here in your brewery, your brew pub. For people who don't know about you, don't know you're even here, tell us about Sennett Ave here out here in Jersey Village.
Well, we are classified as a nano brewery. Microbrewery is anything 5 barrels or above. We are nano brewery, 5 barrels and below. Our brew house is 3.5 barrels. So we produce 108 gallons of beer at a time every time that we brew. So that's a new classification that came out a few years ago. And it seems to be the business model that most new breweries are going forward with. Mm-hmm. Distribution is so hard. So we just sell all of our beer through our tap room. We are a true brew pub, meaning that we have a kitchen. So we have the talented Vahid Navasi, who runs Cafe Benedict in the Energy Corridor. They hopped on board to run our kitchen. So we make a lot of beers that pair with their food. We're open every single day for lunch. Again, not a lot of breweries do that. Most breweries in Houston are Wednesday through Sunday. We are open at 7 days a week. We also do brunch on Saturday, Sundays. You were here for brunch, I think. Were you here for brunch?
I missed it.
Yeah, you missed it.
I gave an Astros.
That's right. We are humongous Astros fans here. We go all out when the Astros are playing, especially in the playoffs. My emotional state is dictated by whether the Astros win or lose.
That's why we put this off for a week or two.
Yeah. I had to chill out a little bit with them. Yeah. But hey, I'm proud of them. But we're also not a typical brewery in the sense that we're in a retail space. A lot of breweries in Houston and in the area are in office warehouse spaces. And so our brewery caters to the customer experience, I think, a little better than, not that I'm competing with a lot of breweries. We're not really competition. There's plenty of space in the marketplace.
Yeah.
But you'll notice when you walk in, we're basically a restaurant that brews our own beer. So instead of buying other people's beer, we brew our own beer. When you walk in, you'll see the tanks, you'll see me, you'll see the brew house, you'll see everything. You'll smell, if you come here on a brew day, you'll smell the brewing experience. Mm-hmm. So that's really kind of what we are in a nutshell. We're community owned. So I own the majority of the company, but I got together with a bunch of friends of mine in the neighborhood and said, hey, let's start a brewery. This retail space became available about 3 years ago. One of the first real retail spaces in the city of Jersey Village, and hopped on it. So yeah. In a nutshell, what we do, we have 12 taps of beer. We've been open a little over a year.
Man, I'm so glad to sit down with you, but also just so glad that you're here. I think even in the last episode, I was talking about how Houston has changed, and the standard by which I was judging it was how many breweries are close to me, right?
That may be a good metric.
Yeah. And you know, I moved from Denver. I'd spent four years in Denver going to graduate school, and there was a microbrewery or a nanobrewery on every corner.
Right.
And so it was, what do you want to go? It's that one, that one, that one. There's just up and down. And every one of them seemed to have great beer.
Sure, yeah.
And so then I moved here with my wife in 2014. So I think we have some similarities in our story that our wives have brought us here.
Yes.
Chasing love. But moved here. We moved in with some of her family out on Skinner.
Yes.
So we're deep in the burbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Deep, and that was 2014.
2014, yeah.
So there just was nothing. It was like you could find some Coors Light some places. Yeah. Like it was it. And at the time, I mean, I remember driving into town even, mm-hmm. and there was Carbox, St. Arnold, but they're still not what they were today.
They still weren't what they are today.
And it was like bars.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just a different thing. And so. Yeah. You know, you've been here for a year, and it wasn't a month or so ago that I stumbled upon you.
Yeah.
And I live, you know, right across the street from Klaus. And mm-hmm. so I was just so excited that there was a place within a one-wheel ride of my house
exactly.
to come drink beer. Like you said, this is so much more than just a brewery.
Sure.
I mean, you have like 3 to 5 operations going on in this space.
It's constant.
Really.
It's constant. Yeah. and you know, you mentioned Carbach, you mentioned St. Arnold, and that's the breweries I went to when I moved back here to Houston in 2010. And they were, you know, it felt like when you went, you were going to a brewery and they were doing their thing and you were sort of an inconvenience almost.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm just here to drink your beer. And they're like, okay, fine, here's some beer. St. Arnold has done a fantastic job, and Carbach has done a fantastic job of flipping the script mm-hmm. and making it about a
destination.
Customer experience, a destination, a proper beer garden, a proper place to go, food. That's really, we're like a mini version of St. Arnold, if you will. Mm-hmm. We have food, we have a play place for kids. It's dog friendly, as you can tell. And, you know, I love going to St. Arnold. I go there all the time. Whenever I have to go to the east side of downtown, I always stop in and pop in. And it's been something that, you know, if you're in Denver, you're in San Diego, you're in Portland, there's a brew pub on every corner, mm-hmm. but most of them are also very small. They're nano sized. My wife and I went to San Diego back in 2011. And I remember you could throw a rock and hit a brew pub.
Yeah.
And they had this, like, you could see the brewing process. You could see what they were doing. You could eat the food, and nothing was constant on their menu. They always had something different. I could tell that the brewers were very happy. They weren't just chugging out pilsners.
Yeah.
They were chugging out really fun stuff. And that's, I mean, if you want to get into a business, that's your hobby, you better keep it fun. And so I love, my morning is coming in and sampling beer. It's great, but I'm not sampling the same stuff over and over and over.
Yeah.
I have some constant stuff that we have flagship stuff, but our size, you're just able to experiment a little bit. No batch is the same. You know, our Hefeweizen has changed like four or five times, and I've only brewed it five times. And so it's different experiments you can do. It's so much fun. And I think once you just get into that, we're just chugging out 30 barrels of this and this and this all the time. It's just
yeah.
It's just not fun. And that some people like it, not crapping on anybody.
For sure.
Business plans or anything like that. But that's what makes us different. And that's what motivates me. You know, I'll go and I'll sample something or somebody will bring me beer and I'll sample it. I'm like, I gotta make this. This is really cool.
Yeah.
And I love it. You know, we're like a big homebrew shop. You
yeah.
know, and it's fun. So.
Well, it's definitely approachable. It's a really great vibe that you've created in here.
Thank you.
But to your point, it's much needed. I think that, as you said, like, yeah, I'll go out that way whenever I'm on the east side of town,
mm-hmm.
which when you live out here, if you work out here,
mm-hmm.
like, why are we driving 20 miles
exactly.
in that direction
exactly.
to yeah. go have a beer or two
yeah.
and then hang out
yeah.
and then wait until we can drive all the way back home? And it's not like you're going to Uber down there.
Yeah.
It'd be like $80 Uber trip.
I've always wondered, I mean, you lived out Skinner, which is Cyprus. Mm-hmm. That's 800,000 people live out in Cyprus. Jersey Village has 8,000 people. There's 2,000 rooftops right over here. You know, when I was on city council and when I was mayor, my big push was economic development. Mm-hmm. And we always went and sat with developers and we're trying to tell them about this area and how there is such a void of stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
I've given this speech 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I, when we want a date night, we go to City Center.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Town Lake.
Yeah.
There is a market here to support it. And I'm kind of happy that I proved it.
Yeah.
you know, could things be better? Of course. It's the middle of a pandemic, though. It's 30% of Americans don't want to leave their house still.
Yeah.
And so that's been a huge, huge challenge. But yeah, there's the market always works out, in my opinion. I think that's what's great about Houston especially is mm-hmm. it's so elastic and there's always people hustling.
Yeah.
And so if there's a market void, we're going to fill it. I wish that somebody else probably would have done it with me because I still feel alone.
Sure.
But I do know now that we've been here that, and I've told our ownership group this, we've been open a year. We've figured out the kinks. We have a good following. We have some capital expenditures planned for next year to grow even more. But it's naive to think that we're going to be alone for long.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more and more of this exact business model popping up.
Yep.
Close by.
Yeah.
And we have to be the St. Arnold of mm-hmm. this side of town because they're going to compare us to the new people. They're going to draw away crowds. So markets are great when you're the first person into it. But it's naive to think that we're just going to be alone.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. You know, there's plenty of, you know, as I told the developers when I was mayor,
yeah.
like, hey, there's plenty of opportunity, plenty of people to feed and drink and it's not saturated at all yet. So
no,
I'm
no,
not
it's a
at all
a ways
worried.
Away.
Yeah. I'm not at all worried. But you know, you still have to, you know, I don't want to be talked about as that place that used to be pretty good. I always want to be the good place.
Yeah.
So
I do love that competitive edge. I think there's something to be said for, I believe in community over competition.
Sure.
I think that's a great sentiment. And I mean that as like, I think we can get along. I'm a parent of divorced children or divorced parents.
Yeah.
And I'm a child of divorced parents.
Right.
There it is. And I have just grown up being like, no, we can...
Yeah.
You're cool. Like,
yeah,
I love you both, and you're
along.
Different. I get it. And so I do believe that sentiment. However, I'm also pretty competitive. And
sure.
I do think that, you know, looking at others around you and striving to be your best.
Sure.
And seeing what they're doing and allowing that to motivate you to push and
sure.
improve and grow isn't a bad thing.
No.
And I think it'll... That's a surefire way to, again, as long as you keep that competitive edge, it
sure.
is when you get comfortable and you're like, oh, well, we did it. Like,
yeah.
And now
yeah.
we can kind of just coast. That's
yeah.
where I think
yeah.
things fall out. Okay. You mentioned city council mayor, but I want to back up.
Sure.
Because I think that your personal story is really interesting and I have to believe that it has fed into all that you've created here. So your first semester, UT Austin.
Yeah.
A couple months in. 9/11 happens.
Right.
The
right.
next
couple
day,
weeks, yeah. It was quick.
You enlist U.S. Army Corps,
yes.
Reserve Corps
yes.
To become a combat medic,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so then you spend years traveling around,
all around,
teaching people medical courses, serving at local hospitals, serving PAs, all of that. But then you get into IT. So kind of just walk me through some of that. I know that's a, that's the kind of the cliff notes. But as you got into that, you got into IT.
Yeah.
Again, you said earlier, like kind of before all this, that you didn't know what you wanted to be to grow up. You still don't know what you want to be to grow up.
Still don't know what I
want to do. But obviously you were cause-driven, and then you just kind of moved from there.
Yeah, I think that's a great cause-driven. I've never used that before. That's a great, my family has always served in the military. I always knew I wanted to do it. And when I was at University of Texas, I was in ROTC, and I wanted to become an officer at some point. I felt that that was a really great way to serve my country, to kind of fulfill my destiny of service that my family has done before. And then 9/11 happened, and I think that was the Pearl Harbor of my generation, of our generation.
Yeah.
And it was a no-brainer. I was angry. I wanted to do something about it. And then the other half is I was not doing very well at UT. I was a biochemistry pre-med major, which was probably the worst decision I ever made in my life. I still to this day tell I have a few 17-year-olds who work for us, and I'm like, feel free to take a year or two off, because I think making a 17-year-old decide what they want to do for the rest of their life is the dumbest thing we as a society
commit to $150,000 of student loan.
It was constant work, constant studying, and I kind of knew that I wasn't going to make it. Mm-hmm. And so 9/11 happened, and I decided to take a shortcut to military service, and I did it. And it was the best decision I ever made. Now, I still wanted to be a combat medic. I still wanted to do something medical. I was still excited about maybe becoming a doctor one day, or a paramedic. And turns out I don't like the medical field. It's just one of those things. Again, I just didn't love it. So I spent my contract term in the Reserve Corps jumping from hospital to hospital, doing a lot of training. Everyone asks where I've been, and I do the Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, man. I've literally been all over the United States. That's kind of how I got into craft beer, because I was stationed for a year in Camp Parks, California, right outside of San Francisco. And that was when the IPA, West Coast IPA scene was just blowing up, and it was like a race to get the most IBUs in a beer. And it was so much fun to see that and try that. So that's where I shaped my palate for beers. And I saw the community as well. That was pretty cool. And then I got into IT because I was a computer gamer, loved to play video games. I would build my own computers to be the best at Counter-Strike ever and get the best frame rate and refresh rate and all that fun stuff. And then I actually started to run my own game servers. So people would actually play on my Counter-Strike game servers. And I was obsessed with security, make sure people can hack it, making sure the speeds were as best as they possibly could. I remember when...
That is our generation.
Oh, yeah.
That's missing a target demographic for sure. Like, there would be people who are like, what?
Oh,
but, like, I know exactly what you're talking about and being like, no, it matters.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was just, like, everyone loved it. And so I just sort of got into IT that way, and security, and learning about, like, I was that dork at Fry's that would, like, buy the motherboard processor combos and get the best graphics card I possibly could. So that's how I got into IT. I got a corporate IT job with a construction company. Actually, before that, I worked for Geek Squad. So entrepreneurship tip, don't be afraid to work at the bottom.
Yeah,
that's
just
where
jump in.
Get experience, get yelled at by grandma in line at Best Buy. That's the best advice I could give. And then from there, I got that experience, jumped to the corporate world with benefits and all that great stuff. And then just worked my way up, grind. And that's kind of how I got into IT. And then...
you did that for a while. You're at the construction company. It's going well. But then that's where, like, you started to take this leap into starting own businesses. So, like, you and your brother-in-law started a business, sorry?
Yeah, so... I moved to Houston to be with my girlfriend at the time, my current wife, Michelle. And we went to high school together. And so I just really put my resume out in Houston, and I got a job with an oil and gas company. It was great. Oil and gas in Houston pays very, very well, great benefits.
Yeah.
It was a really hard job to leave. Mm. But I just got a little bored. I was promoted into a position where I worked for very important people, but there were only four of them. and everything was running smooth, and I just sort of sat idle hands, and there was a dip. I forget which dip it was in oil, but it happened, and our company got bought and then spun off, and so they were laying off a bunch of people. I decided it was my time to spin off and do my own thing. Yeah. So my brother-in-law and I, he already had an IT consulting firm, but it was really just sort of sitting idle. And I'm like, hey, let's, I have all these contacts in oil and gas. Let's start this back up. Yeah. So we did that. I went off on my own and started my own consulting firm, 2016, 2017. And did that. That was my day job. I absolutely loved it. That was the first big leap into entrepreneurship, at least for me. My wife owns a pediatric therapy clinic. Excuse me, I stutter. So she owns a clinic, and she started that one back in 2015. I know they're 6 years old. So whatever year is it, they're 6 years old. So that was a real first jump into entrepreneurship was her starting this practice, lots of overhead rent, signing personal guarantees, all that really, really scary shit.
Yeah.
And so that was the first leap. Then I started my IT consulting firm. That was a little easier because I had clients ready to go.
You had the relationships and people were ready.
I literally the executives of this oil company that I was leaving, they were still in their offices. I just literally changed my shirt and came back in and said, hey, can I be your consultant for your home, for your business, any businesses down the road you start? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. They trusted me. I knew everything about them, about their families, about everything. So that was a lot easier than probably somebody just going like cold turkey. I'm leaving my job and I'm starting a business.
Yeah.
You know, everyone thinks about the, I'm just going to write a business plan, go to the SBA, get a loan, and then bam, I'm in business. No, I got a little leg up there.
Yeah, the relationships make a big difference.
The relationships were there.
So I've got the real estate business, been doing that for almost 4 years, coming up in 4 years. And then earlier this year, launched a media company, which was almost accidental. I knew I wanted to make videos, but I was just going to do that for me. I didn't know if it was going to be YouTube or whatever.
Right.
I was just like, again, don't know what I want to be when I grow up, but I know I want to have fun.
Yeah.
And all the people that I was watching that seemed like they're having the most fun were the guys with the cameras.
Sure.
And I was like, so I want to do that. Started making videos and then started getting clients.
Yeah.
And more importantly, like, oh, hey, I saw that video. Would you do one for me? Right.
Yeah.
And when I finally said like, okay, I'm going to like make a real go of the media thing. I'm going to do these concurrently and build my real estate business where I can delegate as much as I can. So I can do the best parts that I'm best at. And then I can focus on building this and getting it from the ground up. And when I really put my mind to it, said, hey, I'm going to do this. Immediately I had four regular clients because of the relationships, because they were agents in my office that have seen me make videos for myself for a long time, and they were like, we were just waiting for you to do it.
Yeah.
And then it just relationship from there is those people knew me and trusted me and then started giving me referrals for more media work. And it is. I think that if I moved to Oklahoma City with a camera and be like, hey, I have a media company.
Right.
I'm sure I could hustle up some business.
Sure.
But I wouldn't have had the start that I had here.
Right.
Having been in here in Houston for 4 years at a corporate job, where almost every one of those people that I used to work with at that corporate job now are small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Right.
At least five of them have been guests on this show.
Sure.
So that was a big step in the right direction. And then through real estate, just like I made so many relationships through that.
I know real estate, I have a lot of realtors in my family, and it's, they're constantly hustling, but they're having a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of people. You know, it's not so much even the relationships. You can have relationships, but you've got to be the reliable one.
Yeah.
There was a lot of grinding that happened at the very beginning of the IT consulting business. It was calls at 2 a.m. because something's not working.
Yeah.
And I became known as the guy who would answer his phone on the second ring at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And I have my wife is an entrepreneur. She's a hustler. And she understood it. She was never upset that I had to leave for 3 days to go to a swamp in Louisiana to fix a cell phone tower.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, absolutely. I got it. You know? So having that good partnership has been a huge plus. Having an entrepreneur in the family, actually she's more successful than I am. She's Houston Business Journal award winner, all this great
we'll get,
stuff.
We'll get her on for season two.
Oh yeah, she will talk your ear off probably more than I. But she's having a good partnership, having a good surrounding with people who understand. But again, if anyone's listening to this, watching this, and you know, how do you get that client base? How do you build it up? Get experience and always say yes.
Yeah.
IT changes all the time. And I remember I got one of my clients, they were unhappy with their phone bill. And so I started to research voice over IP. I'd never done voice over IP in my entire life. And I just went to them one day and I just said, hey, I can install a whole new phone system. It'll be a tenth of the cost of what you currently pay, goodness, whatever yeah. company was that was just absolutely overcharging them. And they were like, okay, fine, try it. And they let me do it. They gave me a palette with which to paint my art. And,
yeah.
And I did it. But always say yes. You can figure out a way. Join a guild. Join the Chamber of Commerce. Join something that you can network with people. And if you have a question, you can ask. And I will tell you, most people will answer your question.
Yeah.
Worst they can say is no.
Yeah.
So I always get that question from young people, especially how'd you do what you did? I ask questions,
yeah.
But I also said yes to everything that came my way.
Yeah. I think it's being willing to put enough on the table to like really risk. I think saying yes, that's going to, in a way that's going to force you to learn the next thing.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. I mean, so I went out and shot video on Saturday for a buddy of mine who's a previous guest on the show, Jake from Rent eBoards, at a big electric vehicle convention.
Oh, nice.
So I shot for him. That makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I have a good relationship with him. I've shot videos for him before. Yeah. But he got my foot in the door to shoot a video for Segway. Like,
oh, nice.
People like go to China and
wow.
like be approved by their VPs and presidents up like in China.
That's awesome.
And I'm soaked for that. Was also terrified.
Oh, sure.
For like
sure.
A month leading up to that event, being like, I don't know.
Well, you got to look like you know what you're doing too.
Yeah. And just and being like, well, what do I need to learn before then to
yeah.
be semi-competent at this? And again, it was scary. Part of me wanted to be like, you know what? Never
yeah.
mind. Like, it's cool. I appreciate yeah. the opportunity, but I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And maybe I wasn't when I said yes,
yeah.
but I did everything in my power to hustle and prepare and be ready. And Saturday, it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah.
And I produced one of the videos, and I'm really proud of it.
It's awesome.
But yeah, so I think one, it's saying yes and being willing to say yes to things that make you learn,
mm-hmm.
like that you don't have all the answers to or don't
yeah.
have all the skill set
yeah.
for today.
Yes.
But
and manage expectations. That's yeah. a buzzword I think is used a lot, but it's absolutely true. So for example, with the voice over IP client, I said, I've never done it before.
Yep.
I'm going to learn it. We're going to do it. And then also, we kept the old system in place and tested the new system and did a switch over. But we left it to where if something was wrong, we could just switch it back over.
Yeah.
So always have a way out, but also manage expectations.
Yeah.
But you'll find more often than not, people will, especially if you're meshing with an entrepreneur
yeah.
as well, if you're meshing with a small business. Most of my clients were small architecture firms and attorneys and gymnastic studios and dentist office. And so they are running they're hustling as well.
Yeah.
But they also want to save money.
Yeah.
And so that was a real great way of like, hey, I'm small business too. I'm one guy,
but I can
remember
solve
I answer the phone.
For you,
I answer
yeah.
the phone at 2 a.m. I'm that guy. And so they gave that trust to me and they were able to do it, but always say, hey, I'm new to this,
yeah.
So be honest about
yeah.
it. But more often than not, you it's easier to what's the saying? It's easier to ask forgiveness and whatever that term
yeah,
is. But it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. So,
yeah.
I say go for it.
Yeah,
like jump right in, do it.
I
also
agree.
You have the world at your fingertips these days. Google, YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a college dropout. I learned how to brew by Googling a bunch of stuff and going to homebrew competitions and talking to people. And you don't have to have that formal education to be really great at what you do.
Yeah.
There's if you are having a problem, someone else out there has had that problem
yeah.
and they have solved it and they probably put it on
YouTube. And they're most likely going to be willing to share and want
oh,
to
sure.
share.
Oh,
I
yeah.
have,
yeah.
even in preparation for this shoot over the weekend, there are two people that I had reached out to for some questions. One is a guy who I found on TikTok, and I was like, he's a videographer. He's a little further advanced than I am. He's younger than I am, which that hurts. But,
okay.
But and I was like, okay. But
trust me, as you get older, they all
yeah.
are younger than you.
Yeah. And but he's a guy that I just like can text and I like FaceTime and ask him, and we've never met in person. But I found him and was like, "Hey, I love what you do.
Sure.
Can I ask you some questions?" And he was kind enough to say yes. The other is like a famous YouTuber. I mean, in certain circles.
Yeah.
And we've sent messages back and forth a couple times, and I've subscribed to his channel. And
yeah.
I had a question, and I was just like, I need a second opinion. Like,
yeah.
I think I'm right, but again, this is a kind of a big risk.
Yeah.
So I just need to make sure and send him a Instagram message. And
yeah.
Within a couple hours, he had one back.
That's like, awesome.
Here's a couple answers, tips, tricks. And like, that's just,
yeah.
It's not, I mean, that's not something you could have done 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, that like have access to all of these people who have gone before you and are more than willing to be like, "Hey, I have this knowledge. I'd love to share it."
I tell people all the time, I would be terrified to open a brewery had I opened a brewery 10, 15 years ago. Mm. The people who have gone before me, I praise all the time.
Yeah.
They were in a space that was probably a better market because there were less breweries, but the knowledge wasn't out there. And it was really, really hard to, you know, my size, especially, I can order a 7-barrel tank and have it here in 2 months. Back then, they didn't even make 7-barrel tanks. So this business model is kind of new, but it's different because back then they were really pioneers, especially in Houston. And you had to travel to see what other people were doing. There was a guild, but it was very, very small. So, that knowledge base has grown. And a big thing that entrepreneurs need to realize if you're getting into this space is tap into that knowledge. The worst you can get is a no or get ghosted.
That's
basically it. So, I mean, if you're not putting yourself out there and asking questions, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things I've done here that I really should have asked and I didn't, and I paid for it and I'm still paying for it. And we're going to fix that stuff in this next year. But
that's honestly the cost.
Sure.
Of you having everything else that is working.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you couldn't have the stuff that is working without the stuff that you failed at.
Sure.
And the things that you messed
up. You learn.
And, like, you're like, that's just how it goes. And
you're gonna learn.
Like, I bought gear that I thought was going to solve everything, and it didn't.
Oh, yeah.
That was the cost of, like, now I know why.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I got the right thing. Okay. Between IT and the brewery.
Yes.
It's public service.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's talk about Jersey Village for a second.
Okay.
Okay. So, when people ask where I live, I say, basically, Jersey Village.
Yes.
Probably a Jersey Village resident would be like, "Well, okay, you're not really in Jersey Village." And I go,
"Yeah,
like, I know,
people are real
I'm
territorial
like,
with the boundaries and stuff."
I'm about half a mile from Jersey Village. But that's the point. But, okay, Jersey Village is this little town.
Sure.
It's a municipality.
It's
got everything.
Yep. Police, fire, city council,
all
mayor.
Of it. It's got everything. Your police are well known to those of us who live around Jersey Village.
We love our guys here. Guys
and gals. But it's this little pocket town in the kind of the crux of 290 and Beltway 8.
Right.
On your Twitter bio, it says that you were the former mayor of the best town in the world.
I believe it.
So talk to me about why Jersey Village is the best town in the world.
Well, you have to understand where Jersey Village came from. I call us the OG suburb of Houston. Where we're sitting right now was just a big dairy farm. And so that's why it's called Jersey Village. Jersey cows were the cows that were raised on this land that we're sitting on right now. And the people who own the land decided to get into the real estate development business. And they started to build houses and build streets. And then there was a threat of Houston overtaking Jersey Village, and overnight the city incorporated by vote back in the 50s. And so we really like to be independent in Jersey Village. It's a bedroom community that's starting to branch out into economic development, businesses. We're starting to feel the pressure of the 800,000 people who surround us. But everyone's fiercely independent here. We love the fact that we have our own police, fire. We're very proud of them. you know, we write Jerseyville as Texas instead of Houston, Texas on our mail, and we're super proud of that.
Yeah. And I'm proud, that I have, I'm an unincorporated Houston.
Yeah.
And I'm proud that I get to write Houston and not Cypress.
Yes.
So I guess there's a pecking order
here. Sure, sure. I mean, you could write Houston on our mail, but like, it's just one of those things where you're just proud to write.
Yeah.
Even though it's longer to write, you write it. And
because we're writing so many letters these days.
Yes, exactly. When I pay my bills, I'm just happy to write. But yeah, there's been, since we've been around since the 50s, there's been four or five generations of people that have come through, and it's unique in the sense that it's a bedroom community surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people, but our location cannot be beat.
No.
We are 290 Beltway 8. We're 10, 15 minutes from anywhere in Houston.
That's literally why we bought here.
I
was working at the time, Greenway Plaza. My wife was working out at 529 and 99. During the day, we were 43 miles apart from one another.
Yeah.
And so I was like, we'll move towards the middle.
Yeah.
Like, right? And that's fine. But I was like, I'm not going further than essentially Jersey Village for that exact reason is because I wanted to be able to get anywhere. Like you said earlier, we get to City Center, we can go to Fairfield, we can go up to the Vintage area, or we can go into town and be without traffic.
Yeah.
And especially now that 290 is done, you can be there in 15 minutes.
It's really sort of the Mayberry feel where you know your neighbors.
Yeah.
It's had a few things missing. And one of the big things missing was restaurants, entertainment, things to do, because as you mentioned, we're 15 minutes from everywhere.
Yeah.
So everyone goes elsewhere. And that was a big challenge when I was on city council and as mayor was capturing that lost revenue of sales tax. Because we don't want to raise taxes on property tax. We actually lowered property taxes. And so how do you make sure that a business like mine can grow and thrive and contribute what we do to the city and support all those services that police, fire, EMS is not cheap.
For sure.
Our utilities are getting older and older and older. You got to replace pipes. You got to replace that. You got to improve the parks to compete with Bridgeland and all these places that are getting splash pads and dog parks and stuff. And then also at the same time, you've got to smooth over the people who don't want things to change.
Yeah.
And sort of tell them, hey, if you don't change, you're going to become a dying community, and we don't want that, and you don't want that, and how do you? That was a big challenge in communicating with people who just didn't want to see a lot of change, didn't want to become a Bridgeland, didn't want to become a Fairfield. They wanted to stay Jersey Village, and I get it. I absolutely do. I love this place. I fiercely defend it. I celebrate it. I'm the biggest cheerleader there is of the city, and that's been a big challenge. And I hope that I did that. I think I did. I think this place speaks for itself. I think that the changes that have happened after the Highway 290 expansion, you know, we hit a big bump with the pandemic, but I still feel I think our best days are ahead of us. And I'm not even the mayor anymore, and I can say that.
Yeah. Mayor, though, I mean, you set out, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to do all these things, IT. Mayor, where did that come from? I mean, I think you're probably the first mayor that I've ever, or former mayor. Do you carry the title with you forever?
You sort of do. It's been up in the air whether it's sort of my nickname. All of my employees still call me that, so I kind of go by that.
Yeah.
Technically, if you're in an executive position, you get to keep the title. So I go by mayor. It's fine. It's funny because all the mayor before me and the current mayor, we're all really good friends. So sometimes I'll come in here and they'll walk through the door. I'm like, mayor, 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 mayor. And so we joke about that, but
public service though, that was a thing. I mean, did you just, because again, is it just the passion for the community or at some point you're like,
people ask me to be totally honest with you. Yeah. When my wife and I moved here, we moved back here in 2011, bought a house in 2011, closed on it in 2012. And I just, having grown up here and gone off into the world and lived in great places like Austin and Dallas and Frisco and Plano and all these areas that are just using their location and using their community advantages to grow in a sustainable manner and just improve quality of life, I didn't dislike what was going on in Jersey Village. I just kind of saw the writing on the wall.
If things keep going this way,
if we don't do something to compete with the surrounding communities that even some of the, you know, like Steeplechase is right down the street.
Sure.
It's a community that really kind of prospered in the 70s and 80s. They're redoing all of their parks. They're getting splash pads. They're getting dog parks. They're getting these amenities that are improving the quality of life and attracting people like you and me.
Yeah.
What happens when you and I get to be 65, 70, and we want to retire, and we want to go somewhere else, we want to get in that RV and travel the United States, we have to sell our house.
Yeah, and hope that the property values have continued to grow. Yeah,
hoping that you're going to get what you put in. That was a huge challenge, and I kind of saw we keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and I really hate when people say, this is just the way it's always been done.
Sure.
That's like my biggest pet peeve. Sure. That's the way it's always been done.
Yeah, bad reasons.
Great. But there's a way to have your cake and eat it too, in my opinion. And that was investing some money into amenities that were family friendly and community friendly and appealed not just to your young families, as I keep saying that, and that's really, but really, where do you replenish your home buyers from?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that you have to do,
It's the business of a community, a business of a neighborhood. It's really hard to think about.
It is.
But
that's a market. And if you don't talk about it, then shame on you. And so that's something that.
Well, and the builders, the new builds, they sure as hell know.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Right? You go over to Amira over off of 249 or 99 out there, and it is. Like, they're like tour guides. They have built a resort.
Yeah.
That is a part of this neighborhood
because
they know it's going to sell homes.
Absolutely. That was a huge challenge, and I think it went over well because I came from here.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the same elementary school as their kids. My kids go there. I went to the high school here.
You're vested.
So did my wife.
Yeah.
And so, and now I'm really invested in the community.
Yeah.
So
that
was something that I started to go to city council meetings. Mm-hmm. And just sit in the audience and just watch and see how it was done. And then I got asked to be on this committee that was called the Comprehensive Plan Committee. A comprehensive plan, I'm going to bore people to death, but it's a roadmap for a community, for a city. And it goes over everything. It's comprehensive. That's why it's called a comprehensive plan. It goes over, where does money come from? How do you spend it? What do you spend it on? What are the priorities for everybody? Identifying demographics, comparing yourself to everybody around you, pointing out the challenges. It was like a 13-month process, but I got to take a shortcut to see, like, I met everyone that worked for the city. I got to see all the facilities. I got to see the water treatment plants. I got to see everything. And so then once we had this comprehensive plan and we were done, somebody was like, hey, you should really consider running for city council and pushing this comprehensive plan through, because it's just a plan that's formed by citizens. But you actually have to get it, like, it's just a piece of paper unless you actually enact it, right? So the previous mayor was on city council at the time. He ran for mayor and won, vacated his seat.
Yeah.
And so I didn't actually, when I first on council, I didn't have to run for it. I just applied and I made a speech, and they chose me to fulfill his remaining one-year term. Then I had to run for re-election and that was a lot of fun. It was hard work. Literally knocking on doors. It's the old-fashioned shaking hands, telling people your vision, giving them an elevator pitch. And it was really helpful to talk to people. It's a lost art almost.
Oh, my gosh. Certainly.
And so that was probably – and there's – in every community, in every – not just a city, but every community, there's always those people that are just naysayers and negative, and you have to just block them out. And that was kind of hard to do because I'm a people pleaser. And so, but after a while, I was like, well, I'm just spending way too much energy trying to please everybody and I'm screwing it up.
Yeah.
And that was a really big lesson, was just, hey, you were elected to office. People gave you their vote because you said you were going to do this, 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 and this. Do it. And if they don't like it, they'll vote you out. Who cares?
Yeah.
And so, that's that. But it was basically just getting involved in the community, recognizing where we needed to go and just putting yourself out there. I mean, it's really, really hard for somebody who was a super shy, stuttering kid growing up to just put yourself out there like that. But it's made me a different person. It's made me a better person. And it's hasn't given me this business, but it's given me the confidence to go out and start this business. People know me because most people met me by me knocking on their door when I was campaigning.
Yeah.
And so they know me and they come in and I'm terrible with names, but you know, I see their faces and I know them and, yeah. and they know me and they're asking me questions about my kids and my dogs and you know, everything.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's a lot of fun, but, well, you wouldn't really think that community service like that public service would be fun, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
We are nothing as a nation without people getting involved.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to continue doing. And,
yeah.
and it has to be people like you and me doing it and other people of our generation. We just feel like this stuff just runs itself. It does not.
Yeah.
I mean, get involved in your school board, get involved in your Cub Scouts, get involved in your Chamber of Commerce. I mean, it doesn't run itself.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. They're all proving grounds for governors and senators and presidents. And so you, if no one's feeding into that pipeline, it's just the crazy people, then that's what you get. So,
yeah,
you know,
I think that's an amazing perspective. And I mean, I was going to ask, like, well, you know, what similarities are there? What characteristics? But I mean, like you just talk about it, I think it's like a business that you have to get voted in to do.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
so you have to win people's trust. And obviously every business is that. You're mm-hmm. you're winning people's trust for them to give you their money.
Exactly. Exactly.
And yet that's a next level. I mean, I think most entrepreneurs and small business owners would close up shop if they had to go knock on strangers' doors.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, that was, I remember getting my campaign signs, which is your name, really, really big.
Yeah.
And going and knocking on people's, the first door I knocked on, they said no. I was like, hey, can I put a campaign sign? They said no.
No.
And I was just like, oh, I was expecting to be
yeah.
just given permission to put this.
Yeah,
I'm
a
young
say
guy,
yes.
and I'm like, ah,
I'm gregarious.
It was just like, no. I'm like, okay, thanks. Well, hopefully, you know, if you have any questions, here's my email. And that was it. And so it was like door-to-door sales of
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
And it was scary as hell.
I had a taste of it. I mean, when I started in real estate, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any leads. And I'm 34 now. I look like I'm 12. And I mm-hmm. get that that's partially because I do dress maybe like a brew beer.
A beer brewer. I don't tuck in my shirt.
This
so.
Is my uniform.
When people hear I'm 38, they're like, what?
Yeah.
So
And so every like Keller Williams was like, well, you need good door knocking and cold call. And I didn't want to do either of those things. But I was like, okay, I will though. To prove that I either... That I'm
yeah.
willing, prove that I can.
Yeah.
And I did it. And
yeah.
it sucked.
It sucks.
But I think that going through that suck is is forming. And it does shape you of like, oh,
okay,
somebody gets mad at you. They're going to call the cops on you. People like not opening their door, talking to you through a window because
oh, yeah.
we live in the world that we live in now.
Yes, yeah.
And
that is scary. Again, like I said earlier, I worked for Geek Squad. That was the worst. It was your grandma's help desk.
Yeah.
And you got yelled at. And you got questions, and your answers weren't good enough. And you do, when you go through this process, you have to put yourself out there. There is very few businesses that you can just sit at home and not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe you can be a programmer or something. I don't know, but I just you have to put yourself out there somehow, and it's scary. It's terrifying. But I will say, once you take that leap, and once you get some experience behind you, it is so rewarding. So
yeah.
rewarding. So get involved somehow, whether that's being a Cub Scout leader in your church.
Yeah.
Chamber of Commerce is probably the easiest way for entrepreneurs to get their name out there and to meet people. I'm not a member yet. I've been meaning to join, but when I was mayor, I went to the Cyfair Chamber of Commerce, and they're all really, really nice people. It's a bunch of people like you and
yeah.
me. And you sit down to lunch, and you talk about your challenges, and you talk about this. But okay, this guy's making media. This guy is an IT consultant. This guy's a lawyer. This guy does the security. You know, so when you need something, you automatically know, hey, I had lunch with this guy or this lady. And you give them a call, and then it's back and forth. It's a community. And so, but it starts with putting yourself out
there. It's a good point that in a world of social media and, like, social networking, that networking is extremely underrated.
It is.
That getting out there, shaking hands, meeting people, and building trust. Because again, everyone knows that my Instagram page is curated. Like, mm-hmm. I put my best stuff there. I wanted you to see the best stuff and think that I'm awesome.
Yeah.
But sitting face to face with somebody, shaking their hand, looking in their eyes, like there's just nothing that's ever going to replace that.
Absolutely.
As far as building
trust. You can really tell too, like When Facebook and Instagram first came out, it was a lot of people's family pictures, and you loved it. And now it's getting really saturated with brands.
Yeah.
And so
Everyone's a personal brand. Yeah.
We contribute to it. I have my Senate Avenue page. I try to do just one post a day, maybe two, if it's a beautiful day and we're trying to get people here. But you can see how people are just not really paying attention. And there was a time when we first opened in October of last year, and I was here all the time, 16-hour days, pounding the pavement, shaking people's hands, welcoming them in, telling them about our business. And then I was burnt out after the February freeze. And then we went through a time where I was just here brewing beer. I really wasn't here in the evenings talking to people. I didn't do the trivia nights myself anymore. And you could tell it was a little different because the mayor wasn't here shaking people's hands. And I was kind of here. People love a small business, but they want to see the donut shop across the street. Danny's a very good friend. You walk in, he knows your name, he waves at you, and it's that experience that makes his donut shop different from any other one in the area. Same thing here. And so now I'm back to doing these long days sometimes. I don't do them as often, but I make it a point to walk around and shake people's hands because they can probably see me on social media.
Yeah.
But they're probably swiping right past it. Oh, they're Senate Avenue again with the beer.
Yeah.
But they know me. They feel like they know me. It's breaking making that personal connection that you absolutely have to do. If you're doing a brick and mortar business like that, like this, you have to be here.
I mean, Friday night, I had some friends. We had a babysitter. It was the first time going out as a couple in a while. And it was my wife and I and another couple. And we went back and forth where we're going to get reservations on a Friday night for four of us. And it was Thursday afternoon. It's not happening.
Nope.
But, I mean, one of my first choices if we're going to go into town is El Topo, who run by Tony Lerman, who's a guest on the show, mm-hmm. but also is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I want to go to my friend's place.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
I want to go to the place where I know the guy and I sit down and I feel known. Like, the whole Cheers thing where everybody knows your name is a big freaking deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know how I survived this long as a business owner, but also a politician, but I'm terrible with names. And so it takes me a long time to remember people's names. And I don't have any, do you have any tips on remembering? Do you remember people's names pretty easy?
I feel like I try and there's a short term memory, but I also cheat. If I know I'm going to a place, I'll get on Instagram.
I will too. I'll do that too.
Who's going to be here? Oh, what was that guy's name? What was her husband's name?
Yeah.
I'll ask my wife. She'll know. And I'll be like, okay, who's this person?
Yeah.
And now you get to this age, right? I've got two kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. Knowing other people's kids' names?
Oh my gosh.
This is ridiculous.
Never going to happen.
Johnny. No.
Okay.
I like you a lot. And I know you have children. I know you like them a lot. Yeah. They're strangers to me. But
I do that too, especially if we do events and we post a trivia event and I see who RSVPs.
Yeah.
So before it happens, I'll look through and see who RSVP'd and I'll look at that. But if anyone out there has any tips on remembering people's names, I would love, because I'm just the worst.
Yeah.
At it. I'm like, hey, you.
Yeah.
It's the worst. Even customers who've been here since day one, I'm just, it's so hard. And we actually can go pull up the tabs and kind of see the names. So I do that every once in a while. Too, and I'll go say hi.
Mine is not a suggestion to remember the name. I just come up with nicknames. Be like, hey, Chief. Yeah, try that.
What's up, buddy? Yeah. Hey, I'm always I have a slew of nicknames to come up with.
Well, man, I want to honor your time. I appreciate you jumping in all this. I have so much that I want to continue to ask you about, but maybe we'll just have to come back for season two and get a part two.
Anytime. You're welcome anytime.
Senate Ave, awesome beer, awesome spot. We'll push people your way.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thanks.
A huge thank you to Andrew and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. If you are ever on the northwest side of town, I truly recommend that you stop by Senate Ave for great food and even better beers. The Jalapeno Blonde is my favorite beer of theirs lately, so go check it out. If you haven't done so already, go follow Senate on Instagram at Senate Ave. That's Senate Ave, all one word, to keep up with their specials and all the new beers they're constantly releasing. It's really good stuff. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I'd absolutely recommend that you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from apparel printing to student mentors, realtors to ice sculptors. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I am wrapping up season one over the next several weeks. I'm going to go through December. So I would absolutely love to hear what you've liked about the show, what you'd like to hear different, any of it. Give me some feedback. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit milieumedia.com.